Call to order the Industrial Education and Economic Development, Finance and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pawlowski.
Present.
Representative Pawlowski, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Sandell, present. Representative Keel. Representative Bierman. Representative Bliss.
Present.
Representative Bliss, present. Representative Burkle.
Burkle, present.
Representative Burkle, present. Representative Frazier.
Present.
Representative Frazier, present. Representative Hamilton.
Present.
Representative Hamilton, present. Representative Lislegard.
Present.
Representative Lislegard, present. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, present.
Representative McDonald, present. Representative Sandstead.
Present.
Representative Sandstead, present. Representative Sundin.
Sundin, present.
Representative Sundin, present. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Representative Sandell, do you have a motion for us?
I have, Mr. Chair. I've read the minutes of our last meeting, consider them complete and correct, and move their adoption.
Representative Sandell moves the minutes of the last meeting. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. The first item on the agenda is House File 4198. It's Representative Marquardt's bill. I'm going to move that House File 4198 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Marquardt, welcome to the committee. Please present your bill.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 4198, I'm pretty excited about because I think it's going to create a model that's going to be a real game changer for addressing a lot of our workforce needs. And also, Mr. Chair, it parallels, as I'll explain later, a lot of the efforts you've been championing in the last 5 or 6 years when it comes to getting students and others plugged into the workforce and learning skills that you'll kind of see as this goes on. So it really parallels your efforts. You know, we know right now that one of the biggest economic challenges is the workforce shortage. And it's, you know, leading to inflation, leading to supply side type chain disruptions. You talk to almost anyone in any field and they're looking for qualified workers in a lot of these high tech, high skill, high wage earners. And, you know, our demographers have talked about this workforce shortage for the last couple decades. So it's no surprise. It's, you know, it's because of baby boomers like myself who are retiring, but not enough young people coming in to replace people like me. And also, if you look at the demographic studies by our state demographer in 2015 and 2018, when you look at our out-migration, the age group that comprises three-quarters of our out-migration are 18 to 24-year-olds. And so this really addresses that. And what it does, House File 4198, it is brings kind of everyone together to bear to create a constant, strong pipeline of workers into our high-wage, high-demand careers. And it also, as kind of added, upskills our current adult workforce, people who are underemployed or unemployed, and it will help upscale those folks. And so this model, which I think is unique and innovative, creates what we're calling community career workforce academies. And what it does is that it brings your high schools, mainly through your career academies, and your 2 and 4 year colleges, your businesses, your chambers, your nonprofits, and all of your elected officials into creating one unified strategy and plan to deal with workforce development. So instead of a career academy just doing their own thing, or the 2 year college or business sector or elected officials doing their own things, they zero in on a plan to address this workforce shortage. And so the key, and it centers around your efforts, Mr. Chair, is through these career academies, and it focuses on students. And students will get a rigorous, relevant, individualized education that will give them a skill or the opportunity to have a skill in a high demand, high wage workforce with the opportunity to earn a post-secondary credential or degree. And it provides a seamless path for these students for our career and our workforce. And on top of that, through adult basic education, that would bring in adults who right now are underskilled and bring them more efficiently into the workforce. So here's how it would work. The counties would apply. They would, all of these sectors I just mentioned would come together, and they'd come up with a unified plan. And they'd also, with that plan, they would have to say, hey, what do we need for facility needs? How can we do programming? All of these type of things. They then would put this plan together and send in an application to the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And DEED then would rate these applications based on, do they have the facility needs? Do they have the programming needs? And do they have a unified business and talent plan that they can, with some metrics that can be measured? So what this bill does, appropriates $40 million, $10 million that would go to the Moorhead Workforce Career Academy, because they're ready to go. They're the folks that approached me. They have put things together, and I've got Brandon Lunick, who in just a minute will explain what they're planning to do, but this could be a real pilot. $40 million would be appropriated. It would come out of the tax target. And so you ask, well, what would this money be used for? First of all, it would be countywide. So every school district would be part of this. And so, because you're dealing with several school districts, going through the counties would be the best way to do it. But also you need startup costs to retrofit, if you will, some of these current career academies. How do you, upgrade the facilities? How do you deal with the programming? So all these would be part of the cost. And at the end, Mr. Chair, we want results. We want results. And so by 2024, DEED would have to do a report back to the affected committees on, in fact, did this kind of model, did it produce what they said they were going to produce, because we want to address the workforce shortage. And so I'll conclude on just talking about what I think the strong benefits of this are. Students will learn a skill and be ready to hit the ground into a career field. The fact that they're able to work with businesses right now, they'll have jobs immediately. And just as important or more important, it keeps those students in the area rather than going outstate somewhere else. It would provide businesses with the needed workforce skills that they need to meet their demands, addresses our workforce shortages. Everyone is on the same playing field with the same plan. And I think in the end, it makes our economy, our communities, and our state stronger. And so, Mr. Chair, there are some letters of support there from the business community, county commissioners, City of Moorhead, 2 and 4 year colleges. And I have two testifiers, Brandon Lunick, superintendent from Moorhead Area Public Schools, and Catherine Grinberg, who represents the local Chamber of Commerce. And then I think there could be three people on the call who would be available for questions. Commissioner Jenny Mojo from Clay County, MSUM President Ann Blackhurst, and Minn State President Kerry Grimhall. So, Mr. Chair, that's my test. Conclude my testimony, and I do have those two testifiers. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go to the first one, Superintendent Lunick, Moorhead Public Schools. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record, and then give us your testimony.
Okay, thank you, Chair Pulowski and committee members. I'm Brandon Lunick, Superintendent of the Moorhead Area Public Schools. And our region, like many across Minnesota, are struggling with the severe workforce shortage. And as an educational partner, we are working alongside our businesses, nonprofit, our higher education institutions and other community partners in our region to develop what we consider an innovative solution to address the workforce crisis. Two of these major efforts are creating a strong pipeline for workers in the in-demand fields and upscaling the current workforce with an emphasis on our minority populations, new Minnesota citizens, and that underskilled workforce like Paul mentioned earlier. We know that our minority populations, our new Minnesota citizens and underskilled workforce are in the most need of our community education opportunities. So we are working with our nonprofits, our business, and our higher education partners to provide not only the necessary training, but the necessary equipment to support these specific populations. The programming funds will support the creation of a personalized learning curriculum for our students in grades 9 through 12, the creation of an adult education program, and the associated support roles, and also retrofitting some of our current programs. The programs offered will be in the high demand careers from the region. Education in those high demand careers will provide a skilled workforce, a stable workforce, and a strong pipeline which lead to quality livelihoods. Our future 9-12 students and adult learners will have incredible opportunities in our new career academy to explore their potential, not only explore their potential, but to discover their passion, work towards these industry certifications, and gain real work skills, ultimately impacting the Moorhead community, the region, and the state of Minnesota, and also the world is what we believe. At our Career Academy currently, we already have 974 9-12 students enrolled in at least one class that we would consider a high demand field. Further build out of our space would permit us to expand the offerings and capacity for 9-12 students as well as our adult learners in our region. Although we have the potential to train adult learners, we believe that we can expand those opportunities through not only our adult basic ed, but through our community ed program as well, which right now doesn't align with career workforce demands, but this bill would allow us to get all the partners in one room and align this from 9 to 19 plus, 9 through 12 and 19 plus. Our community and region desperately needs our school district and our community partners to step up and lead in the workforce efforts. The Moorhead Career Academy is a natural vehicle to do so, but additional investment is needed to enhance this innovative workforce facility and catalyze its program's potential. Robust new lab spaces are included for buildings and trades, automotive and small engine repair, metal fabrication, and carpentry, along with several large flexible labs for STEM courses such as engineering, robotics, and aviation. This funding allows for the completion of the lab spaces, supporting workforce development needs in areas such as childcare, healthcare, engineering, the buildings and trades, like I mentioned earlier, machining, fabrication, the automotive area, the small engine repair, avionics, and aviation. Collaborative learning, student engagement, and authentic experiences are at the core of this multi-year experience and reimagining education for not just our 9-12 students, but for those that are 19 plus as well. These innovative changes to our curriculum and the adoption of this new model will enable both students and adults to have improved access to career pathways and programming. Regional workforce development and expanded educational opportunities are the key drivers behind the concept of our regional career academy. Thank you for your time, and I'd be available for questions when we're done.
Thank you. Our next testifier is Catherine Grinberg. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then give us your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair, and members of the House Industrial Education and Economic Development Finance and Policy Committee, my name is Catherine Grinberg, and I serve as the Vice President of Public Policy for the Fargo-Moorhead-West Fargo Chamber of Commerce. It is our mission to actively promote a thriving and vibrant metro for generations to come. We represent over 1,900 businesses and are a catalyst for economic growth and prosperity for our members, our businesses, and the greater community as a whole. This afternoon, I come before the committee to express our overwhelming support of House File 4198. As Representative Marquardt and Dr. Lunick both said, this brings together our high schools, two and four-year colleges, businesses, nonprofits, and elected officials together to create and implement one unified strategy and plan to address our critical workforce needs. Through the support of the community-based workforce solutions like career workforce academies, our state can continue to address the growing demand for skilled laborers. As we've talked to businesses throughout the community, their number one issue is by far the lack of workforce. From welders to nurses, semi-drivers to teachers, and every job in between, our businesses are struggling to hire qualified individuals. While this issue continues to plague communities across the state and nation, we must work together in order to create a unified strategy to identify solutions for this challenge. Community career workforce academies are an opportunity for public-private partnerships to thrive and for the state of Minnesota to address the workforce challenge head on. Our society has begun to realize that a post-secondary career path is not for every student, especially with our growing demand for skilled laborers. States like North Dakota have already begun spending millions of dollars on career workforce academies to address this critical workforce issue. For example, during the 2021 legislative special session in North Dakota, the state appropriated over $80 million in matching funds to career academies across the state. To overcome this widespread workforce challenge, we must create a robust learning environment, promoting career exploration and striving for choice-ready graduates. Moreover, to overcome this widespread challenge, the state of Minnesota must continue to make investments in creative workforce solutions. The Moorhead Career Workforce Academy in Clay County is an extraordinary example of innovative solutions that exist in the state of Minnesota. With the financial support outlined in this bill, new and existing academies can expand access to new Minnesota residents and underskilled workers. If there's one thing that you take away from my testimony today, it is that workforce challenges will not be solved individually. It can only be solved as a community. And this bill ensures collaboration of all stakeholders, including elected officials, high schools, two and four-year colleges, businesses, and nonprofits. The Chamber is committed to combating workforce issues and stands ready to partner with other stakeholders to tackle this issue. I'd like to direct you to a business coalition letter that you should have received from Representative Mark Bart, where over 20 businesses stated their support for this. As such, we support House File 4198 and respectfully urge you to do the same. Thank you for your service to the great state of Minnesota and your attention to this critical workforce issue. And I will also stand for questions.
Thank you. Members, questions? And as Representative Mark Bart has already said, we have three other people on the call who may also be able to answer. So, questions? Representative Hamilton, I see you first.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Marquardt, just yesterday I was speaking to two different students, and the reason I had that call is because there's a group of mayors in southwestern Minnesota trying to come up with a program to keep students in Minnesota, because what's taking place is many of our students are going over to South Dakota because they have a program called the BUILD program, and if a student goes to a career tech school and stays in South Dakota, gets employment in South Dakota, their debt is forgiven in 3 years. The other student I was talking to, and so one of the students went that route. Another student talking stayed in Minnesota. His degree was in finance, I believe, obtained a good paying job. However, he shared with me that it'll be, he will be 44 years old when his college debt is paid off. Which is, it's shameful if you think about it. My question to you, Representative Marquardt, is there anything in the bill or in the agreements to help alleviate that student debt for students that are enrolling in this program, if you will?
Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton. There isn't anything necessarily in this bill. In the tax committee, we do have a bill that would significantly expand the student loan debt a credit that would really pay that off. And I mean, we're looking at maybe $3,000. Currently, it's $500 max. So that will be included in the tax bill. I don't know the exact amount, but there isn't anything dealing with that specifically in this bill. But Representative Hamilton, you mentioned a great thing here. I think, and Ms. Grinberg can correct me because she'd given me the numbers on this, but I think North Dakota in the last session just authorized like $80 million for what we're talking about, kind of these type of efforts. And you mentioned a program in South Dakota. I mean, I think this is the way to go. And, you know, this would be one way to get some of these started. But, Appreciate your comments.
Representative Hamilton.
Just closing, Mr. Chairman, we as the legislature, we need to be thinking about that. You know, when I was listening to that, what that student said, they shared with me that they will be in their 40s before they can afford their own home because they're paying off college debt. We need to be thinking about that long term as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative Hamilton, there are discussions underway in the mid-state system, particularly between the 2 and 4 year colleges, and I'm referencing primarily Winona, on trying to get a system in place that would make co-credit for going both to the 2 or 4 year during your high school career and also getting your high school diploma. That's a critical component to this. I'm a big fan of saying you can graduate high school with no debt and still have an employable skill set. So you've raised an issue that we have under discussion, at least in the Winona area and with the chancellor. Next on my list is Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually just took my hand down, but that's okay. I'll ask the question. First of all, thank you, Representative Marquardt, for bringing this bill forward. You're spot on. You're spot on with this. My question is actually to Mr. Lunick. Just a point of clarification. Your career academy is different than what we hear of, like in Alexandria, as a career academy. Correct? You're more of the partnership with Moorheads or with the state college system.
Yeah, because of the proximity that they have.
Hold it, Superintendent. Hold it 1 second. Let me recognize you first that the people at home know who's speaking, and then if you just identify who you're directing the question to. So, Superintendent Lunick.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Representative Stansteed, here's the answer to that is we believe that we have a great relationship with both our 2 year and 4 year, and we're fortunate here in Moorhead because we have them in close proximity to the location of our career academy. And we also have quite a few students that attend both the 2 and 4 year option as the PSEO option as well. So when we talked about student debt earlier from Representative Hamilton's question was, one of the answers that I would have to that is that our goal through our academies and the pathways that our students can take, not just mainly 9-12 at this point until we figure out a solution for the 19 plus, we wanna give our students as many opportunities as we can through the PSEO option. So when they do come out of our 9-12 program, they have the skills that we need to be employable, but also college credits to their name as well when they start. So for instance, it's not uncommon to see some of our students graduate Moorhead High with a Moorhead diploma, but potentially enter into a 2 or 4 year institution with 12 to 14 credits to their name already. And we want to continue to enhance that, especially as we get to the bottom of those courses in those pathways, which we believe can be picked up by both 2 and 4 year schools to increase those opportunities for our 9-12 kids. We do have work to do, however, which when we get everybody in the room, maybe we can come to some sort of a conclusion on how we handle the 19 plus, because we also believe that that's a component that we have to get better at.
Representative Sandstead.
That takes care of it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Preface this with a conversation I had in my district with New Americans. It's a group that they're working hard at getting people employed that reside in East Grand Forks, just up the river from Moorhead. And I think this is a wonderful project. My concern is the 19 plus, are we thinking about a top level of age group, or would we just 19 plus? So if you're 25, 30, whatever, that you would be able to do that. They're looking, this New American group is really looking to be educated in fields that would provide for their families. So I, Representative Marquardt, this is a great idea, I believe. So, but if Mr. Lunick could maybe expound on how old and do you have to be in the Moorhead area to attend a 19 plus class?
Superintendent Lunick.
Thank you, Representative Keel. One of the things that we're working through right now is we believe that through our adult basic learning program and through our community ed program, we can address all of those things that would be a concern of yours. We believe that our community ed program is a big catalyst for this 19 plus, and no, there is no age limit on who we would serve. If you feel like you need to get upskilled, and we and there's an opportunity to do that through our community ed program, we would offer that. And the reason I say our community ed program is because we can get together with M-State, and they do a great job with workforce development, and maybe we can offer the classes through our community ed program, but taught through some of our other entities or community partners as well. So I don't believe there's an age on it at this point. I don't believe that's a good thing to cap it. But I don't know if it can be expanded beyond our region, for instance, of what our reach, what our community ed program can serve. I think you have to be a resident of Moorhead. I'd have to look that up. But right now, our goal would be to have no age limit. If you're a community member and you want to take these courses and you feel like they're an interest to you, then we would offer them to anyone that's in our area. But we believe that what sets this model apart is it addresses both the 9-12, then the folks through our adult basic ed program as well, and our community ed program, which we believe can serve our population outside of perhaps the school district, but we would be able to work with our community partners to get that education and that upskilling to a demographic of our community that may have not been a part of our school district.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. And Superintendent Lunick, this could easily be, maybe not easily, but worked out with Northland Community College, which is another Minnesota educational program up in our district. So I just think this is a great idea because this is what we need to get people employed and ready for jobs. So I think Representative Marquardt, probably a little more money would be nice in there, but we'll see where it goes. It's a pilot project, correct?
Representative Marquardt is nodding. I think he stated it was a pilot project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Question for Representative Marquardt regarding some of the logistics of the bill. At what age would your bill be exposed to? What age of kids would this direct? Was it the 19 or 18 to 25 only or younger?
Yeah. So,
Marquardt, do you want to answer that or should we go?
Well, no, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald. So, I mean, it would start in ninth grade through the Career Academy. So it started as early as ninth grade where you start getting a career path and individualized learning and so forth. And as Superintendent Lunick just said, too, there would be no age limit as far as through their adult basic ed and community education. There'd be no age limit as to how old.
Representative McDonald.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And then also, I think in your presentation, you mentioned that the 40 million would go for, or maybe the superintendent mentioned it, or some of that 10 million for Moorhead would go towards what, infrastructure and buildings or part of the curriculum. Is that correct?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, it would go for some retrofitting on facilities and then also to enhance and add programming.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And then of the 40 million, so you said 10 million is gonna go towards Moorhead right now for the pilot project. The other 30 million, is that gonna be, that's grant money through DEED that will go out through what, is only three other cities or counties, or how do you think that logistically will work?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative McDonald. So, yeah, $40 million total. $10 million has been set aside for the Moorhead project. And then it would be counties, putting together a plan and then applying to DEED the maximum grant is 10 million. So, you know, there could be at least three more that would fit into this or more if the grants were less than $10 million.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. And then of the counties being involved, I would presume, and maybe you mentioned this, that the businesses will be involved as well, your chambers of commerce in the communities, because the counties, of course, by themselves really can't distribute this or work together with a strategic plan, as you mentioned. So I would presume that you'll get the chamber of commerce and civic groups in the communities that are consisting of your trades and your businesses, your manufacturing. Is that true?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, yes, and that's required under lines 1.13 and 1.15, where it talks about they're established with, you know, a partnership between, and it lists all of these entities. So they have to be part of that plan. And what would be really good is you're able to, in the region, if you have a real shortage in a certain area, you know, Representative Keel was mentioning that, you know, you would have that business involved working directly with students and so forth, that, you know, be able to immediately plug into a shortage that you might have in the region that may not be a shortage somewhere else.
Representative McDonald.
Very good. Representative Marquardt, then, first, I support the efforts, and at this point, I believe I co-authored the bill as well. I told my LA I wanted to sign on to the bill. I believe strongly, and that's why I'm on this committee with Representative Pawlowski and the rest of us who believe so strongly in the issue. In your bill, perhaps you would consider an amendment, if it's not in there. I perused it real quickly. I didn't see it. That would make sure that any school district in the state of Minnesota would never deny on school career days any trades trades businesses and or trade schools to participate in the school in the career days. We are aware of that some schools in Minnesota wouldn't allow the military or a trade organizations to participate in career days, which is a shame completely. What do you think about that, Representative Marquardt?
So, Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I agree with what you're talking about, but I wouldn't want to start adding kind of policy items like that to this bill, because I think that's something more for education policy and something for others to consider. But I mean, one thing about this bill, this is, you know, and it's going to include any and all trades. And again, it's going to be everyone coming together, talking about what are our needs. So all the, you know, any type of trade that is important or needed in that area is going to be included. But you're talking about actually having a career day coming into a school. I mean, I wouldn't want to amend this bill for that. Not that I wouldn't support that elsewhere, but I wouldn't want it to add it to this bill.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, fair enough. Thank you. So great bill. I think it has some great merits, and I look forward to seeing this take root. From experience, just real quickly, Mr. Chair, I know a young man who went to 1 year of college at South Dakota State and decided that he chose a different career path. So he got an apprenticeship with a heating and air conditioning plumbing company here in Delano, and at the age 20, bought a house, sold it 2 days ago, made a pretty good profit, and now he's buying another house in another community, got another job, he's making more, he's paid off his student debt. He incurred the debt, so he believes that he should pay it off, not the state, and he's doing very well in the trades. And because of that, my young 16-year-old, who's not sure what he wanted to do, even though he's just as he's smart as his mother, he's thinking he may want to go into the trades as well, because he sees the fruits of the labor and the joy it brings to Jacob, his brother, working in the trades. If this bill, it appears, will do that for our young generation, spot on. Thanks a lot.
Members, I don't see any more questions. So before I go to Representative Marquardt, I
Mr.
want
Chair.
To... I'm sorry, was there someone else who had a question?
Yeah, Rep. Ray just got his hand up.
Oh, boy, that really blended in badly in your screen. Representative Frazier, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairman Clark, thank you for bringing this bill. I do think it's important. I think it's what we need right now. And I agree with Representative Keel that I think we're going to have to expand this because I really think we're going to see that it's going to be successful. And I love how you, the way you've drafted this so that it creates this collaborative participation between business, community, the school districts, and the trades as well. And Representative McDonald, I think that'll actually get at the issue, the concern that you raised with this collaborative effort. I think you're going to see education working closely with trade, so it won't be an issue of whether or not they're allowed into the school on career day to be able to have the kids exposed to that. I think this is great. We're looking at the shortages that we have in our state, and I think this is a great proactive way to try to address that. So, Representative McCord, I'm looking forward to supporting this bill, and thank you for bringing it.
Have I missed anybody else's hand that somehow is obscured in their window? I don't think I have. So before I go to Representative Marquardt, this is the third legislative session, including the Winona mini session of October 2019, that we've been working on a simple statement that every high school senior should have the option of graduating, not just with a traditional high school diploma, but also with an employable skill set. And in the discussion today, 9 through 12, that's a perfect model for what we've been working on for the past three legislative sessions and one mini session. So Representative Marquardt, thank you very much. You have the last word and then we'll go to a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And right, well, you've championed this and I know you and I have talked about this before and I think it's taking it to another level that I think the potential is just so exciting and could have such a huge impact. And I want to thank all the members for the nice words in the discussion. And I really want to thank the community members from Moorhead, you know, Brandon Lunick and Catherine Grinberg. And I know Carrie Brimhall, the president of Minn State, is on, and our county commissioners. I don't know if I miss anyone else, but they brought the idea forward. And it's their vision, and it's matching what you have talked about, Mr. Chair. And I'm hoping we can make this happen. Thank you so much.
I'm going to renew my motion that House File 4198 be passed and be referred to the Tax Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pulaski.
Pulaski votes aye.
Representative Pulaski, aye. Representative Sundell.
Aye.
Representative Sundell, aye. Representative Keel.
Aye.
Representative Keel, aye. Representative Bierman. Representative Bliss.
Bliss, aye.
Representative Bliss, aye. Representative Burkle.
Burkle, aye.
Representative Burkle, aye. Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Frazier, aye. Representative Hamilton.
Aye.
Representative Hamilton, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Representative Lislegard, aye.
Representative Lislegard, aye. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, aye.
Representative McDonald, aye. Representative Sandsted.
Aye.
Representative Sandsted, aye. Representative Sundin.
Sundin, aye.
Representative Sundin, aye. We have 11 ayes, 0 noes.
With the 11 to 0, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to taxes. Thank you, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you.
Next bill on the agenda is House File 3605. I'm going to move that House File 3605 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. Representative Rasmussen, I saw you somewhere. There you are. You have an amendment, the DE2 amendment. I think we should probably put that on first, and then we should have you present the bill. So I'm going to move the DE2 amendment, and Representative Rasmussen, why don't you tell us what the amendment does?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The DE2 amendment adopts language that was adopted in the Senate based on feedback from the Rural Broadband Coalition. Additionally, we're adding a cap of $5 million per year for the next 3 years, and also adding some reporting language that was requested by the electric co-ops, and also have some language that's been requested by the railroads in terms of easements.
All right, members, I'm going to have you vote on the amendment to get the bill in the shape the author requests. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying
aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. The bill is now in the shape that you want it. Representative Rasmussen, 2-year bill is amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I very much appreciate the opportunity to talk about House File 3605 today. As members of this committee know, Minnesota is on the cusp of unleashing an unprecedented amount of funding for broadband deployment. Over the next few years, broadband providers have or will receive federal broadband funds to provide service to thousands of unserved households here in Minnesota. These funds, along with vast amounts of private capital, will allow Minnesota to complete its mission of ubiquitous access to broadband access across the state, if that money is spent wisely. The efficient distribution and use of this massive influx of federal funding will pose some major logistical challenges. This is a major construction effort and will not happen overnight. Supply chain, labor market, and regulatory processes will be extremely strained as the market absorbs this unprecedented amount of capital. In order to get projects built and more Minnesotans broadband, policymakers and stakeholders need to examine every part of the funding and construction process and eliminate as many barriers to deployment as possible, ensuring no one is left behind. House File 3605 seeks to solve two of the specific challenges in ensuring that the substantial inflow of funding is put to work to bring broadband service to customers as quickly and efficiently as possible. Mr. Chair and members, very much appreciated the wide bipartisan support on this bill, including 15 authors here in the House. The first aspect of the bill is a line extension program. This aims to directly connect residents and businesses lacking access to broadband internet service with providers and assist in the expense of extending broadband to these homes and businesses. Some households are in areas that show up on broadband maps as served, but still do not have broadband service. This hurts their eligibility for current programs. Additionally, the new federal mapping requirements will remove serviceable areas from maps if they do not currently have service. This will result in Swiss cheese holes across the state in our broadband maps, and without passage of this bill, frustration for those unserved locations. Some addresses are serviceable, but would require a significant investment from the homeowner to extend service. Others require a line extension from a nearby plant. This bill would assist in both of these scenarios. State and federal broadband programs are currently not scaled small enough to provide grant support to build to these addresses. House File 3605 enables the Office of Broadband to use border-to-border broadband grant program funding to award smaller scale grants to help reach these customers. So here's how the line extension program would work. The Office of Broadband will create a portal that will allow any person to report that broadband is not available at their residence or business. OBD will then execute a reverse auction for those addresses. Providers will bid on the amount of requested state subsidy to provide service, and the office will award the lowest cost bidder. The line extension program includes a maximum project cost of $25,000 per project to keep program costs under control. The second aspect of this bill is dealing with broadband easements. Last session, a bill was passed that would allow electric cooperatives who hold an existing private easement for electric service to be able to use the same easement for broadband service. Competing broadband providers do not have the same right as electric co-ops to use private easements acquired for other purposes for broadband service under current law. Article 2 of the bill would simply give the same rights granted last session to co-ops to all broadband providers. Expanding access to rural broadband is an issue many broadband providers are working on, and it'll take all types of providers to accomplish ubiquitous access across the state. This language also helps the state avoid preemption problems with the bill passed last session, since under federal law, state provisions related to a broadband service must be competitively neutral. Mr. Chair, there's a couple of testifiers that I have today, but also wanted to note for members that the some letters of support that have been sent in. First from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Technology Association, and the community of Minnesota resorts. And so thank you again, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to talk about the bill, and we'll hand it over to our two testifiers.
All right, before, I think the first person I have on the list is Anna Boroff. And before you begin, Ms. Boroff, I have a request of you. I would like you to contact Owen Worth, my committee administrator. I would like you to set up a meeting with Representative Eklund and myself, and I would like that meeting to occur before the House budget targets are announced. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Anna Boroff, and I am the Executive Director of Minnesota Cable. And my members are proud broadband providers across the state, and I am happy to follow through on your request, Mr. Chair. House File 3605 helps ensure we don't leave Minnesotans behind when it comes to a strong broadband connection. And so we thank Representative Rasmussen for carrying this important bill and really appreciate many of you for being co-authors. So your willingness to think outside the box will make sure that we fill the remaining connection gaps in our state. As Representative Rasmussen mentioned, Minnesota is about to unleash hundreds of millions of dollars for broadband deployment. This is an unprecedented amount of funding. And so this bill will help ensure that this money brings broadband service to customers as efficiently as possible. Representative Rasmussen mentioned the first section of the bill is the line extension program, and I can confirm that current broadband funding programs are not scaled small enough to provide grant support to one, two, or three addresses. And so these are addresses that large builds will likely not reach. And so without this bill, we will continue to leave these residents and businesses behind. And I'm sure you have run across the situation, because I hear from you all often. Your constituent looks at a broadband map, and because they're so close to broadband infrastructure, it shows them as served even when they are not. And so unless we provide the Office of Broadband with the tool to identify and reach them, these locations will continue to wait for service or be forced to come up with the funds to pay a provider to serve them. Or, you know, another scenario we hear a lot about is, you know, the fiber connection is really close, but it just doesn't extend far enough, you know, long driveways, that sort of thing. It just doesn't extend from the street to the residence. So our goal was to keep it simple and flexible. We recognize that a barrier today is that, you know, providers in the state are not equipped to go through that time-consuming and prescriptive process to reach only those one or two addresses. And so our Minnesota border-to-border program is excellent, and there's a lot of federal programs as well, but they're just not scaled to reach these addresses. So this concept was based on a successful program in Indiana that has and continues to be modeled in other states. And the second section of the bill addresses broadband easements. And so in 2021, legislation passed allowing electric co-ops to use their private easements for broadband service. Other providers, such as cable providers, don't have that same ability. So this would simply extend those rights to all broadband providers. So we look forward to working with you all to hopefully pass this legislation to help ensure every Minnesota household has access to a strong broadband connection. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Next on my list is Tony Mendoza. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, I have nothing to add to the outstanding testimony already provided by Ms. Boroff and the comments of Representative Rasmussen. I was just here in support, and so I'll leave it at that unless there are questions about the bill that I can help answer.
Sarah Erickson is next. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Rasmussen. I am Sarah Erickson. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Regional Rail Association. We really appreciate the advocates and the author's willingness to work with our association to make sure our concerns about crossing railroad property were taken into consideration. We appreciate the author's amendment today and look forward to supporting the bill and working for its passage. That's it, and I'm happy to answer questions if there are any.
The last testifier I have is Sarah. Is it Thick, Otter Tail County?
Yep, thank you,
Mr. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Sarah Pasek, and I represent Otter Tail County. Otter Tail County's vision statement is, quote, to be a recognized and respected county where people want to live, work, and play. The county is rich in natural resources. We have the largest number of lakes in any county within Minnesota. We have a growing economic development base with many well-known companies calling Otter Tail County home, including Lund Boats, Tuffy's Pet Foods, Barrel of Fun, and Brunswick, among others. I want to share the county's support for House File 3605, the Broadband Line Extension Program, and we want to thank Otter Tail County's own representative, Representative Rasmussen, for his work on this bill. As I mentioned, the vision of Otter Tail County is to be a place where people want to live, work, and play. Access to reliable, fast internet is a key component when people choose where they're going to live, work, and play. We know that many people are working remotely from home, which makes reliable internet service vital. We also know that many people check in on work when they're on vacation at one of our many resorts. Additionally, reliable internet is essential for our students to thrive in their education. Large areas of our county do not have access to high-quality broadband, and there's a digital divide that presents barriers to accessing service and technology. House File 3605 is a tool that will advance the expansion of reliable internet to hard-to-reach homes and businesses. We want to thank Representative Rasmussen again for championing this bill, and we urge the committee's support. Thank you.
I see the first member to have a question is Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Rasmussen. I have a question about the great amount of Minnesota that which does not have broadband accessibility immediately. 2 weeks ago, I think we saw a map on in this committee, and I was amazed at the amount of space and the number of individual households without broadband access. The bill, I think, asked for $5 million each year through 2025. I know Representative Eklund is proposing legislation on the issue of broadband as well. Will it take from now to 2025 to serve the whole state with the kind of broadband that those of us who live in the suburbs or the city benefit from now? Do we need additional legislation to get to a situation where all of us have the same sort of access to broadband?
Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Sandell, for the question. And just to clarify, the bill before the committee does not include an appropriation. We did include, from conversations with stakeholders, a $5 million per year cap for the next 3 fiscal years. And the reason behind that is, you know, especially in conversations with the Office of Broadband, it's going to take them a little while to build out this tool, and the vast majority of funds will be focused on larger border-to-border grants. And so for me, it's going to be really important to get this tool built up, because as we fill out the map, there are going to be these holes. And I hear it from both my suburban colleagues and my greater Minnesota colleagues, and the frustration that those individuals have where we don't have this policy tool to be able to reach, you know, one household, 3 households, 1 business that's left out from these bigger programs. And so for me, it's going to be really important for us to get this tool built out so that once we, you know, need to start filling in these holes, we have the capability to do it. But I'm always in favor of, more efficient funding for broadband infrastructure.
Representative Sandow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Representative Rasmussen. I certainly support the bill and appreciate the initiative. Ms. Borup, how long do you think it will take before all of our state has the access to broadband that's so important for our future?
Representative Sandow, was that directed to Ms. Borup?
Yes, please.
Okay. Ms. Borup.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a great question. Because we are in a position now where we do have a vast amount of resources, now it's sort of the job of managing expectations, like you say, of how quickly we can get this bill now that the funds are here. It will not happen overnight for many of the challenges that Representative Rasmussen mentioned, supply chain, workforce issues. This is a lot of capital that can't be dropped in the state overnight. So I think in a few years, I'm really optimistic. I think we'll get there, but I think it'll take a few years to just logistically get it all in the ground.
Yeah. Representative Sandow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Borup, and the rest, Representative Rasmussen. I certainly appreciate the work and I'm an enthusiastic supporter. Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from any other members? Seeing none, then Representative Rasmussen, the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to have the conversation on this bill today, and I look forward to getting this bill passed and giving the Office of Broadband another tool to help build out our broadband infrastructure in Minnesota and make sure that no one is left behind in our work towards that goal. And so thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity, and I appreciate members' support.
Before I make my motion, is Angie Dickinson still on the call? I don't see her right now. There she is. Ms. Dickinson, I have a request of you too. I would like you to call the committee administrator, Owen. We're set up a meeting with Representative Eklund and myself in reference to a recent change in the governor's budget on broadband and a clarification of what that change means.
Mr. Chair, happy to do that. And thank you, committee members, for this hearing today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I'll renew my motion that House File 3605 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pawlowski.
Pawlowski votes aye.
Representative Pawlowski, aye. Representative Sundell.
Aye.
Representative Sundell, aye. Representative Keel.
Aye.
Representative Keel, aye. Representative Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Representative Bierman, aye. Representative Bliss.
Bliss, aye.
Representative Bliss, aye. Representative Burkle.
Burkle, aye.
Representative Burkle, aye. Representative Frazier.
Frazier, aye.
Representative Frazier, aye. Representative Hamilton.
Hamilton, aye.
Representative Hamilton, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard, aye.
Representative Lislegard, aye. Representative McDonald. Representative Sandstead.
Aye.
Representative Sandstead, aye. Representative Sundin.
Sundin, aye.
Representative Sundin, aye. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, aye.
Representative McDonald, aye. We have 12 ayes, 0 nays.
A vote of 12 to 0, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way. Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. I have one final item of business. Representative McDonald, are you still here? He is still here. Representative McDonald, I did receive your email in reference to a conversation you had with Representative Eklund, and I will answer it this way. You are on my list. With
Excellent.
That,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Business before the committee, the meeting is adjourned.